go on a Monday. It's Cody and Gold broadcasting live in St. Joe from Chiefs training camp. A soggy morning, but practice taking place outdoors today. You know, Andy Reid kind of likes to have a little bit of a practice or two, a little bit of football out in these elements as a test for some of the guys with ball security and things like that. But it's not a padded practice, so keep that in mind. With anything, any reports you hear today, whether it's somebody made a great catch or anything like that, just keep it on. There's no pads.
Shorts
today.
And T-shirts.
It's a short and T-shirt kind of practice, but it is a soggy one. Still a good amount of fans starting to trickle their way in. I'm assuming a lot of people are waiting in their car.
Till the last minute?
And a later start to practice.
That's probably fair. Yeah, that sounds right.
Later start to practice doesn't really get going for another 10 minutes or so. So normally it starts by about 9:15, 9:30. Today, 10:15 is the start of practice. We are expected to have Chiefs wide receiver Justin Ross join us on
the
show.
Much discussed on this show.
$9.65.
Or not discussed?
The $9.65 jar might have a record day.
You and I might have to each put in $9.65 just for interviewing him. Do we owe $10 essentially to the show fund?
We might actually do that. There were some tweets over the weekend, specifically from our producer Drew, suggesting Drew might be contributing $9.65.
Wide receiver five.
That is the saddest flex of all time.
Right.
Like, look out. He could be wide receiver five. In a good day, maybe he could be. But he's fighting for a roster spot.
I don't want to say he's wide receiver two.
Fair. So we'll have Justin Ross join us after practice today, ask him why this year could be different, right? Like, all jokes aside, you know, he had another really nice catch. Gets people excited. He's been successful at high-pointing the football in preseason a year ago and all that. But last year, ultimately really didn't have much of a role in the field, also had some off-the-field stuff. So we'll talk with Justin Ross after practice today. That's the expectation, at least. One really good sign so far at practice, and I would say maybe a little bit of a surprise, and that is that Justin Reid walked down the hill today with a helmet on. Now, it's not a padded practice, but the fact that he has a helmet on would lead you to believe that perhaps he's been cleared and is off the pup list. We'll find out officially after practice.
Or the NFI list, I think, is what he was technically on.
Yeah, non-football, you're right. Yeah. Non-football injury
Same
list.
Difference, but
But you're right. It is technically the NFI list, which would mean time-wise, opener's not till early September. It would put him on track to actually be ready.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a small deal. I had told you when I'd first started hearing about the injury, they weren't really sure about the length and that there was at least, you know, like a small risk, right? But a risk that maybe it would be slow going up to week one. I still don't think he'll participate in like a regular part of camp. There are only 4 days left of camp, by the way. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Thursday is the final day. They don't do jack.
It's like a half
hour
practice.
They sign for veterans and they don't practice. They're here, but it's not like they're actively doing
it. It's military appreciation day on Thursday, and so they won't have time to sign autographs for those in the military, which makes all the sense in the world. So these are really the last two, three practices that actually matter. Today, as you said, it's not pads, so really.
But I didn't think he'd get on a field with a helmet on his head, so that is further than I ever thought he'd be. And with 3 weeks to go, that's a big deal.
And Kadarius Toney's back at practice today,
too. Well. Everybody's
and he needs
back.
To be back at practice. I mean, you just talk about the availability, and I know we're going to.
Justin Ross, guys like that challenging his spot.
The Hollywood Brown injury maybe changes it, potentially the final 53 roster in terms of the wide receivers that make it. There's now a chance that it changes the math on that. We still don't know an exact timeline on Hollywood Brown, but first play of the game in Jacksonville, preseason, makes a catch, goes down, and I'll call it a fluke injury because it is. Like, it's not an injury that, according to the so-called experts, has a ton of re-injury risk. It's something that is pretty rare, and by now everybody's aware with Hollywood Brown, did not travel back with the team initially because he had to stay in the hospital, and then ultimately made his trip yesterday, or I guess it would have been yesterday, back to Kansas City. I'm going to butcher the name of the injury, but he suffered a dislocation of his sternoclavicular shoulder joint before being discharged from the hospital, and it could be a very serious thing. That's why he went to the hospital. Could actually puncture some blood vessels, I guess, that are near the heart, and obviously cause major complications.
Yeah, I don't think you want your clavicle jabbing into the other parts of your body. That's not its point.
Yeah,
you are right in the sense that it's a fluke injury, but when we had all these conversations about Hollywood Brown, and we said, hey, he can have a career year, or this could be, like, part of the thing that we discussed with him was injury. This is now, if he misses any games, if he misses two games, three games, four games, and we don't know what the number is going to be, he might technically miss zero based on the
I think it's a one or two game thing.
I don't think I know. I don't want to, like, put a real timetable on it until the Chiefs give some indication on it. Tyreek Hill would have been back by week two. when he had this injury a few years ago, maybe week three. But because of the math, like you said, I don't think they'd wait till week six and hit a bye week and do all that nonsense because they like doing that too. So, but if he misses any games at all this year, that will now be in his six seasons and as an NFL player, he will have played a full season twice. That's it. He'd have only gotten through. Now, he doesn't play only seven games or six games. He gets more than that in, but it's always kind of something. And this one, yeah, is kind of freakish injury.
He literally first catch in a Chiefs uniform, first play of preseason, lands, you know, I don't say awkwardly, but obviously, you know.
It was awkward.
The right spot to have a rare injury. And, yeah, I mean, we're going to find out a more stern timeline, maybe. You know, I don't think we're going to find out today, but in the next week or so, a more realistic opportunity for when he could be available. But, you know, I mean, I think he has a chance to have a career year. Well, if he's missing a game, obviously I'm changing my expectation for what
I expect.
You know, I just last week we had our Take Tuesday video up on social media, and I said he would have more than 1,000 yards, which would be a career high, 1,100 yards. Well, if he's missing a single game, then go ahead and I'm taking that out of the picture.
And
it's a bummer because what he provides this team, yes, is the deep threat, but anytime we heard from Mahomes, Cody, this offseason, it wasn't just about the deep threat. It was that, man, he's a lot better route runner than I realized, and he's just a solid receiver. We had Nate Taylor sit right next to us maybe a week ago at practice,
so
he's like, yeah, it's been a quiet camp, but in a good way, like just solid player. Kind of, you know, like we made the comparisons a couple years ago to when Juju was playing well,
yeah.
Whereas like, hey, he wasn't the most flashy player on the field by any means, but you needed a third down conversion, another reliable target. That's what they also miss. If he misses time, right now, you're right, we're all guessing. I think it'll be two games or less that he actually misses, but it's a big blow considering the first two opponents.
It's always
the Ravens and Cincinnati.
Yeah, that's the problem. The problem is the timing of all of this and where it puts the extra pressure. You know what this puts a massive spotlight on? The Rashee Rice suspension possibility.
No question.
Because then we're having a completely different conversation. If Rashee were to get suspended by the NFL before the league starts, well, then you could play your first two games, Cincinnati and Baltimore, against AFC opponents, two teams who have contended for you for the number one spot, two teams who have been in your way on the way to a Super Bowl. You've gotten past them, but, like, in your way on a way to a Super Bowl, and you could be without your top two wide receivers. You could be going into that game with your number one wide receiver being what? Mecole Hardman?
Justin Watson.
Justin
probably.
Watson?
Yeah.
Justin Ross? Like, I mean, you run into a problem. Xavier Worthy? You run into a problem where you're counting on your 1-2-3s being Watson, Mecole, and Xavier Worthy for two important matchups in the early portion of the season. I don't want to start the season that way. And so, yeah, the Rashee Rice suspension becomes all that more intriguing. But this also speaks to, at least they've got some depth. We're not mentioning the names that have had no success in a Chiefs offense. We're just starting to mention what it was when people were dinged up in the middle of last year. You're like,
well, you'd be back.
Really like
you'd be back to where you were at times last year. And the good news is, if it's, you know, for Hollywood Brown, no, it's not. We know it's not a long term thing. Well, that's, you know, it might
no,
be
it's
a
not
couple
a season
games.
Long injury. Yeah.
Rashee Rice suspension. The closer and closer we get to the season, more likely there's not a suspension. And here we are. It's August the 12th. This has been a topic the entire offseason. And at some point now, they don't follow my. The NFL certainly doesn't listen to me and follow my guideline. But I told you, if you can't make a determination by August 15th, I said this 2 months ago, by August 15th, if the NFL can't determine a suspension length by then, well, then you need to wait till the following season to suspend him. We're 3 days away from that. And so if all of a sudden
they might not feel the way you do.
No, that's what
yes.
I'm saying. They're not listening to me. But if it's August 25th and all of a sudden they lay down a suspension, that's frankly BS. So it needs to be this week.
It should be within the normal time frame in which you would expect a team to game plan. For the first week of the season, I would assume Andy Reid is working on his game plan for that specific game about 2 weeks out. That's what every team would expect to do. The rest of them are working through training camp and establishing and installs. 2 weeks out from the regular season, we should be able to plan who is available to be on the field to catch the football. And I just like that is a whole part of this where like the NFL and separate from this. But yeah, it stinks for Hollywood Brown. And it just makes you wonder, okay, maybe it is only a 2 week injury, but how long till he feels normal? It's like the Travis Kelce thing. Sure, maybe he gets on a field in week two, but is it week six before he's right? All these things that add to the problems of it was kind of a new look offense. They were going to look a lot different than they've been before. They wanted to go back down the field, and now they got to finagle it again.
We'll talk throughout the show today about what we saw in the preseason. Like, it was extremely limited work, as
other
we expected.
Other than Carson Steele's a star.
You know, we will talk about Carson Steele. Extremely limited work for the ones, as we expected. And that one drive resulted in a field goal, not a touchdown, and everything like that. Who cares about that? Nobody mentioned scores in preseason games, or now, so you don't even remember what the score was. But the point is,
I don't remember.
What I did think was interesting, as soon as Hollywood Brown was out, you're like, okay, well, then who immediately went in? Did you see who the first wide receiver that actually got, quote-unquote, more playing time on that drive?
I missed it.
The first guy in, Sky Moore.
Oh.
Now, is that just want to see more, or no pun intended, or is it that
he's further up the depth chart than we
realize? I don't know. I mean, that's just all but I thought that was kind of interesting.
It's not nothing. And again, the Xavier Worthy stuff, he ran three snaps. They ran one drive. Maybe their plan was to get Sky Moore in right after Hollywood, get him a lot of work in the second and third quarter.
Well, the first play of the game.
So when Hollywood went down, then you put him in, you know.
The first play of the game ended up being the pass to Brown that unfortunately led to the injury. But if you go back, and I think it was Matt Derrick that pointed this out. He went back and watched that particular play. It was designed, maybe the first option was Worthy deep, but credit to the Jags, they were ready for it, like everybody kind of knew, and they got pressure on Mahomes, and then Mahomes was able
nice
to
completion Hollywood.
Get to his next read, and Hollywood Brown, it was a nice completion, just the injury sucks.
Yeah, that's what it really comes down to. And then I saw, because this is always what happens, I would like you to sit on things for about 48 hours before you make a decision. The immediate reaction from a number of people was, and he's got to stop playing people in preseason, man. He can't do it. He's risking all their lives. Like, he's sending them out on the front lines. He's risking their lives out here. If he keeps operating this way, we'll never survive. This, to me, is a non-story. The Andy Reid handling of preseason is so tried and true. The man is coached in like 45 title, you know, like conference title games. He has won 3 of the last 5 Super Bowls. He does not have an inordinate amount of preseason injuries compared to other teams. Football is a violent sport in which people, Gold, you might find out, can hit you and hurt you. And so because of that, people will get hurt. The 5 snaps that Hollywood Brown was going to take in this preseason game, eliminating those is not going to eliminate the risk of injury. Not what, you know, then maybe he just shouldn't practice in pads at all. Maybe he shouldn't practice at all, Gold. They should just look at it on tape and then figure out how to play football later. I just thought this was a non-story. With Andy Reid does not need to change anything about how the way he handles players, handles preseason playing times, handles the difficulty of his training camps. Any of those things, in my opinion, Alex, don't matter. The way he handles preseason is fine. Maybe do you disagree? This will be a fascinating turn if all of a sudden you're like, he should get rid of it.
No, the preseason reaction, anytime someone gets hurt, this is where I don't care if it's in Kansas City or is in another market. If a starting player happens to get hurt in a preseason game, everybody wants to all of a sudden act like none of them should play. And Andy's old school. This is how he operates. He's had plenty of success doing it this way. No, specifically with Hollywood Brown, Cody, I really mean, I know we can say injury prone all we want, but like, to me, that was a very fluky injury. It is a rare injury.
Some people they're cursed. Like, I don't know if you want to, like, they were born on, like, a graveyard. I don't know what the reasoning is behind it. He's just hurt more than other people, though. I know that you want to be like, well, this one's a freak injury. I know, but, like,
every quote-unquote.
Every injury is a freak injury. I don't know. Like, when somebody slides into your knee, freak injury. That's just being injured.
Yeah, but, like, I guess so maybe I need to be more specific. So there's a difference between someone that just constantly has soft tissue injuries, hamstrings or whatever. That, to me, is way more injury prone. That is way worse than somebody that happens to land on their sternum incorrectly. Or not sternum, I guess in his clavicle or whatever, collarbone. And where it happens to then come through and maybe disrupt some blood vessels or something like that. Like, that's way different than others. I hear you. I get it. We know the track record. But I do think we can't just use a broad term for every single injury. Like, we joke with Drew about Joe Burrow being injury prone. Well, if you're starting to have 4 different injuries and we all agree that they're all fluky, then that's one thing. Like, Joe Burrow this year, if he were to have a wrist injury again, that's not fluky because he already has a wrist injury.
But what if he just hurt his shoulder because he landed funny?
Well, then at some point,
But
a broken collarbone's not a fluky injury as much as what this literally every again. I know nothing when it comes to medicine. Okay, but every expert on this, has flat out said it is an extremely rare injury. It's one that doesn't have re-injury risk, and that it's something that can actually kill you if it pumps a blood vessel in the right spot. Like, it's a serious injury. That's why he went to the hospital. But it's also, like, it's not something like, man, hopefully when he gets hit there again, it doesn't happen again. That's, nobody's saying that. That's sure. all I'm getting at. But yeah, we'll see. But your broader point about the entire preseason and how Andy Reid operates, no, it doesn't mean he needs to reevaluate. People get hurt in the preseason. It happens.
Yeah, that's just the way it works. Like, someone says, yeah, and then there's Rodgers done after four plays in week one. Like, there's just no reason to reevaluate. His system works. That's the other part about why would you be yeah. thinking about changing his method? Because the Texans are like, well, would he still be coaching a head coach here if Patrick Mahomes was drafted elsewhere? Yes, because they were the worst franchise in the league.
And Andy
they
also,
were the number one overall pick coming off their most tumultuous offseason and regular season ever, and Andy Reid got him to the playoffs in year one.
I mean, you just have to look at his time in Philly. I mean, the guy went to multiple NFC title games. What are we trying to say?
He didn't get Alex Smith to an AFC title game, but I firmly believe he would have. If Alex Smith had been the head or the coach, or some other quarterback had been the let's say he had traded for Kirk Cousins in year three.
Yeah, now if you want to have the question like, would he have a Super Bowl ring without him? That's a fair question. But
depends on who the quarterback after Alex Smith would have been.
But would he have had
Alex Smith forever?
Would he have had success here without Mahomes? Yeah, absolutely. He was having success before without Patrick Mahomes. I don't know how we got on the can Andy Reid coach question on the morning somehow. That's weird. What a weird timing.
It just he said random question. He's just trying to maybe he's just thinking it through. I just know. I don't worry about that. I don't worry about the preseason stuff. I do worry about the injury and what it means for the team and how they're going to handle that from an offensive perspective. And I'd hate for them to have to spend the first month reining it all back in only to try to rediscover the deep ball like post-bye week. That would be an incredibly frustrating moment, I would think. That's all. It is practice, by the way. They're actually having it. If you didn't hear the beginning part of the show.
Yeah.
Justin Reed and Kadarius Toney are out on the field. Somebody was very upset. They're like, man, I can't with Sky and Toney again. As important players, I'm with you. As back-end roster players, that's where I become less upset. Like, I saw the catch from Justin Ross. It was a nice catch. And I don't have any argument against that. Chiefs have had a long time to look at Justin Ross and haven't been able to find him regular season snaps versus the preseason ones he's been getting pretty consistently over the course of the years. So I'm open to anybody at wide receiver 5, 6, 7, especially considering their depth. They tell me 6 and 7 or more and Toney, fine. If they want to just write him off into the sunset, also fine. But, you know, I'm not like married to any particular combo at 6 and 7.
Look, there was nothing in the wide receiver room on a preseason game, knowing what it is, a preseason game, where you're like, oh my gosh, that player really stood out. There was nobody in the wide receiver room. I know Remigio, I think, had the most receiving yards.
He did.
But there, you know, he was very fortunate also on the fumble that was ruled not a fumble.
Got a little careless with the football there.
You know, that was, for his sake, that was good that it wasn't overturned and it was ruled that it wasn't a fumble. There was nobody in the receiving game where you're like, man, that's somebody that really popped. You know, Wiley, they tried to give him some opportunities. He was fine.
They
definitely fed him the ball. They brought him back in after he didn't finish the second quarter, I think, and then they brought him back into the third quarter when they had moved on to some more backups.
Because they really wanted to get a look at him, obviously.
Yeah, but we're going to talk about Carson Steele more specifically later this hour. I mean, him and then Jaden Hicks.
Hicks did stand out because he was doing kind of everything.
Jaden Hicks popped. I would argue, other than the obvious, because Carson Steele's carrying the football, he's on offense, and when you score a touchdown, you're going to stand out. Other than him, Jaden Hicks stood out more than anybody else. We heard all the talk around him after he got drafted that, hey, maybe this is a huge steal. Maybe he was the best safety in the draft, and how did he fall to the Chiefs? You could see why they're excited. Special teams, they've already praised him at camp, and we saw it in action in the preseason game. We saw him just on the defensive side making some key tackles. He, without even having to look for him, he was evident on the football field.
Am I a hater if I say that Anyedike Uzomah stood out in a not great way? It was not particularly effective.
You mean in terms of holding the edge?
Yeah.
A little bit on the same thing, same issues as last year.
No, I don't have to bring him up right now. We can wait till a regular season game to worry about FAU. Hicks did really stand out as being one of those players who are like, he's not going to be on special teams long. The second that one more safety exits this room next year, he'll just be in the mix. That's how I feel.
But this
about
year
it,
he right? might be one of their best special teams players.
I know. We're great.
Yeah.
That's how it works sometimes with rookies. You remember Shamari Connor was a really good special teams player. Really good safeties. It's not uncommon for them to pop on the four phases of the game thing until they're like, ooh, we're going to need him to play more. So if you don't mind, Tobe, I know he's your star over there, less. Use him less because we're planning on using him more on defense, and you're just going to have to manipulate that, which is fine. That's always like the good problems to have as a coaching staff, is if you want to start using one of those players more.
We'll talk about the kickoff rule change. You guys have known my feelings on that so far. Interesting weekend when it came
to say the
that.
Least. They've already admitted they screwed up the Chiefs call.
The Chiefs call in particular, but also around the NFL. There's some numbers that show the rule change is working, but I'm very, very skeptical. We'll get to that in the 11 o'clock hour as well. We're also about 10 minutes away from talking some Royals baseball. We know they're in Minnesota, a critical series against the Twins after the Twins just played against the Guardians, and the Royals are coming up on those Twins for that second wild card spot.
They're 2-5
right now
against
well.
Them this year.
And
know?
They all admit the Royals are within striking distance of the Guardians. They didn't technically gain any ground from when we did the show on
didn't
Friday, but they didn't lose any ground. And that's key until you get to the Guardians series at the end of the month when you have seven games against them still and be within that 3 or 4 game mark to at least position yourself where you could catch them without having to go 6-1 or something crazy like that. So we'll talk some Royals in a bit. We are at training camp where our coverage is presented by Technology Group Solutions, the official IT provider of your Kansas City Chiefs. Did you catch yesterday the closing ceremony at all, or did you at least catch some of the action at the Olympics?
I caught the final event.
Just like that.
They won the final gold, so most golds tied for and most medals overall.
Tied with China with 40 golds, and had the most medals overall. The U.S. women's basketball team got a win by 1 point against France. It was a great game. The men the day before against France, another fantastic game.
They're trying to rob Jordan Chiles of her bronze.
Those were the headlines. And the ratings were massive for the U.S. men's game against France. Second largest turnout market-wise was Kansas City. The largest viewing audience. Second tied with San Francisco, I think, was Kansas City. Think about that. We know that Kansas City area, most sporting events tends to be top five, whether it's football, whether it's clearly Olympics or anything else. This is a great sports town. We know that. I'm trying to bounce the recency bias because I've seen so many people, and whether it's just talking to buddies, like watching it as well, everybody thinks this has been one of the best Olympics we've ever had. And I'm like, okay, let's pause for a second. It just happened. But if you think about all the moments, it's definitely in the last 15 years, last 20 years, one of the number one, number two Olympics we've had in the summer. I still think Michael Phelps.
That year's going to be tough to tell.
Tough one. And also the time zones. Like Michael Phelps was live in prime time, if I remember right, back in like 08 or whatever. Whereas this was tape delayed unless you were watching in the afternoon when you were at home and it was live and you work from home or something. That's great. So that's tough to top because of it being a live event versus tape delayed. But these Olympics have been terrific, and it does create more momentum for when we get to host this thing in the United States in L.A. out in 2028.
Yeah, just wait till then and see what the ratings are. But the basketball thing is not insignificant. It's the same stuff we keep trying to tell people. Kansas City can have an NBA team because they support teams better than other markets. Look at the current for the women's soccer team. Look at how well Sporting was supported over the years. The Royals and the Chiefs, obviously, and then in a game that anybody could watch, right? Same vibe. Atlanta can watch it the same as San Francisco can watch it. San Francisco is like the top five market in the country, and they had the same rating as Kansas City for the NBA game. If an NBA team were here, I always hate the argument that, well, I think we'd support NHL, but I think we'd support either. I don't think that as a city, I don't think that's a problem. But I feel like these massive ratings should give you some indication that they would be willing to support NBA players. This wasn't the college basketball national championship. This wasn't the college football. These are NBA players. This is Stephen, LeBron, and everybody else.
So I agree with you mostly. Let me play devil's advocate a little bit on it. I would say the interest in basketball in particular and why the ratings were so great. There is also the fact that it's Team USA, and there's the sense of
America.
And America,
and we're the middle of America.
Yeah, like
the Patriots.
There's a little bit. There's definitely a lot of that going on during the Olympics and during those games. So
everybody.
But that would be my only pushback on that. Like, well, this just proves that an NBA team would be great. I think the NBA would work, but I think some of it is because those same athletes, by the way, that were playing and representing the United States are the same athletes plenty of people will trash for other things that play in the NBA when they're playing in the NBA. Let's not forget
that. Yeah, but they're not your guys yet, you know?
I'm just saying.
I think that always changes the calculus a little.
The other part, I think you would agree with this at least. Anytime right now anybody wants to talk about NBA or NHL in Kansas City, I remind you, let's get our stadium crap figured out in this town for the Royals and Chiefs first before we try to act like we could support another professional franchise. As of right this second, we don't know where the Royals and Chiefs are playing in 2031. That's just the fact. Now, are they playing in our region? Sure. But we don't know. Maybe there's more clarity at the end of the month. Jackson County has a deadline. If you think somehow the Chiefs are going on the ballot in November, I tend to not think so, then the deadline's the end of this month. Jackson County and their legislature is trying to work on that. We'll see. But that's my anytime, and not just you, Cody. Like we've always talked about.
We've had these for 20
right
years.
Now, I think it's almost just weird to talk about possibly NBA.
Until you can sort the
stadiums. We got to get the Chiefs and Royals figured out first.
That's fair.
All right, coming up next, guys, let's talk about those Royals who are now on the road. They're going to take on the Minnesota Twins. And one thing that you think has to happen for this team over the next 3 weeks. Back here in St. Joe, Chiefs training camp coverage continues. We are broadcasting from the Comcast Business Tent, powering possibilities. A soggy morning up here. No pads for practice today, but as we mentioned, a lot of good news so far with who is on the field. Justin Reed for the first time. Looks like maybe he's off that NFI list. Nick Bolton wearing a helmet today. Also saw Kadarius Toney back out there. So all promising things as we are still, believe it or not, over 3 weeks away from the start of the season.
How is it still that far?
Right, away? September 7th? Something like that?
That is the last preseason game. You won't be able to listen to it on the new 96.5 The Fan,
that's right,
by the way. Starting on Thursday, that's when we'll officially make the transition to 96.5 The Fan. You're home for the Chiefs. You're home for the Royals. You're home for Missouri and K-State. So, yeah, next preseason game will be right here. I mean, technically, kind of like
Chiefs here, play the Lions at Arrowhead on Saturday. And, yeah, that'll be on 96.5 The Fan.
I can't wait. I'm really excited. I did. It's a time thing. So if I have the time, I have narrowed the song choices if I'm going to the fans' new theme song.
Oh, did you get jealous?
What, sorry,
did
fans not have theme songs?
Did you get jealous of the Colts fan that went viral his singing? Did you see that?
That guy? No, I'm not jealous of that guy. Although, kudos, I guess, because I wouldn't even have bothered singing a preseason football game?
Got to start somewhere.
Yeah, that is true.
We'll play that later. Don't
I support
worry.
My brethren singing about sports.
You're supportive of that guy.
Sure.
Really?
Here, Drew, play it for like 5 seconds. We weren't going to talk about it here, but play it for 5 seconds for our audience.
Well, let me get it. Hang on
if
a
they,
second.
If they know, so they know what we're talking about. But that song was how I imagine you first started out in your singing
it could
endeavors.
Be.
This is our team. We bleed blue. This is our Colts. Whether win or lose, we love them.
Yeah, that's enough for now. We'll play more.
Woo!
Later, but yeah,
man, that guy's brilliant.
Thank you, Drew. Yeah,
Cody's winning a Grammy compared to that.
True, I'll give you that.
What the hell's that supposed to mean? You know what? There's a lot of haters on this station. No. I get called a hater on FAU. I heard Dusty tease that song on their show, and he said, "Coming up next, you think Cody's songs are bad? Wait till you hear this guy." That's not
tease.
How you had to tease it.
It's a good tease, Dusty. Well done.
That's not how you have to tease
it. That's a nice tease.
You're
going to
say,
Dusty,
"I know you think Cody's songs are great. Let's give you somebody else. He could have been nice."
No, I like the way he teased it. That's a good job from Dusty.
You are much, 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 much better than that fan, Cody. Mm. Miles. Eons
will,
better.
By the way, we will get to what we all were doing on Friday night. We hung out a little bit at Bartle Hall for PickleCon. We had our grudge match against Dana and Parks. All three of us performed. One of us bled by the end of the match. Someone also got accused of abuse. I mean, it's a crazy night at pickleball. So we'll get to that in a couple of minutes. But let's talk some Royals baseball and where they're positioned. Overall, like, it was disappointing, the series against the Cardinals. I think it's fair to say.
Because the first game slipped away, for sure. It's hard because it's a split to be, like, terribly upset. But, yeah, that first game felt like they had it. And then the bullpen imploded again.
Again, and then you're keeping an eye on what was going on with the Twins and Guardians series. And for the most part, that series went kind of the way you were hoping it would, leading into now a massive series again, like pretty much every series seemingly is, but this one against the Twins starting today in Minneapolis, the team that you're only a half game back of the second wild card of, from, I should say, and then knowing that the Guardians still aren't really playing that good of baseball. You're within striking distance of really everybody at this point in time, but if the bullpen is going to continue to be what it is, other than Urseg, the offense, man, got to lean on the offense.
That's what it is. I've come to realize that over these next 3 weeks, and certainly starting in probably like 10 days when they've got that really brutal stretch where they're going to have to beat teams like the Yankees, teams who can slug, teams who are going to put some runs on your starting rotation versus the few runs other teams get, you're going to have to rely on the offense to win some of these games. I'm not saying they haven't this entire year. They certainly have. But they're going to need the offense to actually be the second biggest reason or the co-biggest reason along with your starting rotation to win these things, because the teams you're up against here coming up are going to be able to get some runs on your guys. I could say the same thing as the series last week, unfortunately, though, where, okay, you got the Twins for three games on the road, and guess who's on the mound it is? Oh, once again, it's Singer, Riggins, and Lugo. So maybe win two out of three. That was my same energy last week, and it remains my energy Monday through Wednesday this week. It is your three best AM starters. Take two out of three against a team who you have a better starting rotation. They're going to start a rookie in this series, a guy they just called up. And while I understand his strikeout-to-walk ratio is one of the most absurd I've ever seen.
What, seven strikeouts in 90-something innings?
Yes, to 112 strikeouts. He has nine walks and 112 strikeouts. It's like a ridiculous ratio. So I understand, and Royals don't have a great history of going against guys their first time, but whatever. It's your three best starters against them. The offense is who I'm relying on to maintain it. I keep telling you that if the Royals, they're closer and closer every day. Now if they finish 500 the rest of the season, 88 wins. It's the same thing. They get closer and closer to that if you don't even have to win every series. If you can just play even, play static, you will be okay. But, I mean, that gets harder if you don't win some series, too.
As an observer, I put more weight on this series because not only it's a divisional opponent in the Twins, but what you just said about the way the rotation lines up. A week ago, we did say the same thing about the Red Sox. And then we left the series, people were just saying, hey, maybe the Red Sox just have the Royals' number, right? Lefties against Brady Singer, just a bad matchup. Okay, if you want to say that's all true, well, then in this series against Minnesota, they can't walk out of this three-game series and have the starting pitchers, though.
A team that they're 2-5 against right now. You think you can go 2-8 against the Twins and pass them in any wild card standing game?
It's that, but also just for more confidence long-term. Because it's one thing to say, hey, just Boston is what they are. They're a problem. Problem matchup, don't want to see him. Minnesota, though, should not have that same level of success against your three, I'll basically call them all three aces to a certain extent because they've all pitched that well at times. It's not as if Brady Singer was awful against Boston. He gutted it through. It's not as if Lugo was awful. It's not as if Reagans was awful. But the dominant type of outing across this three-game series, I need one of them to give me seven innings and not seven innings gutting it through four and runs. I'm getting greedy. I need seven innings of like 2-3-run baseball from one of these guys because the Twins should not be a bad matchup for you, and they're not. I understand the season record right now,
exactly.
But they're not a bad matchup.
It's a five-run differential in eight games. So I mean, there's not some big gapping between these two teams from a performance standpoint. But I want one. I do not think it's unreasonable in a three-game series against the team directly ahead of you. And I'm not saying it has to be tonight. It could be Tuesday or Wednesday. It's to win tonight. There should be one game a series if Riggins, Lugo, and Singer are all pitching in it. In a three-game series in which those three guys pitch, there should be one game where the offense drops five and the pitcher absolutely cruises and you and I don't have to quake in fear about who might come in for the bullpen, who might come into that spot. They should just control it. And I think that that's very realistic for the team. I'm not even saying that's a bad case. I mean, I wasn't overly upset about the Cardinals series. I think splitting against a good Cardinals team or a pretty decent Cardinals team is okay. It was the bad taste in your mouth because of how they lost that game. And once again, you're kind of stuck up again. We'll get into the bullpen at 11 o'clock because there continue to be questions. And now Harvey's back on the injured list. So that adds another element of the another level of complication to it. But yeah, I'm relying on the offense to help carry some of this.
Let me tell you, no quaking over here. Okay. No quaking over here. You might be quaking, but no quaking over here.
No, you don't want to admit to that?
No, I'm not. No quaking.
Who's the first pitcher where you're like, oh boy? Or is it just the second they're like, and the starter is out of the game, game's 3-2 Royals, and they just say, now it's the bullpen for the final three innings, and you start feeling
a little
unwell?
It's the bullpen as a whole. That's fair. If you're right now, I think it has to be, with the exception of Urseg, the answer is everybody. That's the problem. Like, we can highlight individual. It doesn't matter, because everybody has had their moment where you felt good for a brief period of time, and every guy in the bullpen except for Urseg to this point has also had the moment where you're like, you know what, wow, that guy could actually be the answer. Each guy has had that. We've seen glimpses, but we've also seen plenty of the negative, too, and that's why there's no confidence in the bullpen from the fan base and why the job of Q to manage the bullpen, I think, is extremely difficult. People want to be really critical of how he's handled the bullpen. I would ask you, though, like, a lot of times when someone will say, hey, you should have put that guy in. Yeah, but that was the same guy a week ago you were bitching about that you didn't trust either. You can see why it's a problem for Q to manage the bullpen right now. What group of two or three guys can you trust? That's what they have to figure out during the next 40-plus games.
It's not going to be easy to figure out. Ideally, they will, but it's going to be a challenge to find those matches. You had mentioned Friday night, we're at PickleCon. We had
what a
our
cool setup, man. Pickle,
oh, cool. I mean, they had like hundreds of vendors, and I think they've already announced they're coming back for 2025. I mean,
they had all the very nice pickleball courts and you know, the high-end nets. They also had some beer from
Fat Tire, New Belgium.
It was a great night. We had a good time the whole weekend. We were just there Friday. I heard on Saturday it was crazier because that's when they even had more of the men's singles, women's singles going on from the real competitive pickleball matches. Ours got competitive, though.
So we didn't know what we were walking into necessarily because I had played pickleball going into this, even though, and we'll talk about why Scott Parks is accusing me of lying about this, I had maybe played pickleball five times in my life. Gold had played zero, none, until we had shown up to the court and we were taking on Dana and Parks in a publicized grudge match between them. Dana is in a league. Parks plays pretty regularly, so we thought we might be in a little bit of trouble, to the point.
And Drew was there because
I
was like, oh, boy.
Alex didn't want to bring down the team.
Need a sub, and Drew had played 6 hours or whatever on the beach the week or two before.
And it turned out you were better than you thought you were going to be, right? Like, you thought it was you were – once we got some practice in before the match, you're like, okay, this is reasonable. I'm not being asked to do too much.
I had a great time. It was fun.
It was a lot of fun. I was sore, and we can talk about that embarrassing part. But let's talk about how we got the win, more importantly. The win for this team. Because there's two things. One, Alex, I thought you handled yourself. I'm giving you a compliment. I was also worried going into the match. You had said you'd not played a single day of pickleball, and I'm
like, I don't know.
I don't know. This is going to go so good. But you were, you know, like, you're holding your own.
I was happy with my performance in that match. I was. I was happy with
that. We got our ass kicked in
the second match. We went up against a professional as well, and I could not return a damn serve for the life of me. That was not a good match.
That's not important. That wasn't our grudge match.
No.
Our grudge match was against the...
I started, Drew subbed in for 3 or 4 points. I subbed back in. We were down, 3 points?
Late.
At one point late. They had 10, they had 11.
They were serving with match point.
Mm-hmm. And then suddenly, Park serves it. I return it back to Parks. Then Parks returns one at an angle short. It's going to head towards out of bounds. Cody, out of nowhere, comes running from the other side of the court and full speed kind of lunges out and flips the pickleball around post, which is allowed, and stays in. Meanwhile, he goes crashing into this barrier, okay? Everybody's
going. They cut the entire wall.
There were fans, believe it or not, in the grandstand, some listeners. Everybody was stood up and was amazed by your performance. Meanwhile, we're still playing. You're over in the barrier. We're still playing.
Yeah.
And they volley it back over. I spike it down. We survive. You, at that point,
I didn't realize at the time. Adrenaline was going high then. I was feeling good.
You went into the barrier so hard that you started bleeding.
Yeah, I had a puncture wound on my back from the stanchion. So I guess I will be, you know, it's a good thing I'm not litigious. You know, I could get Odyssey for this injury.
You signed a liability waiver, man.
For who?
For playing at PickleCon.
Did I?
Yeah, we all did.
I don't remember doing that.
You guys, we all signed. In order to get the ticket, we all signed.
Okay.
So I honestly think that people wouldn't – this goes back to what Drew and I talked about in the air. I'm not good at just being cool about it.
I was impressed with your performance.
Because when we start playing games like that, I want to go at 100%. The same reason I was accused of abuse of Dana Wright, because I hit her on 3 straight points with the pickleball, including one that left a welt on her leg.
As long as you apologize, okay.
I also hit her in the chest and, like, the feet, and then hit her all 3 times, because sometimes it's a good way to get a point in the game is just to hit it directly at somebody.
Yeah, I was impressed with your play. I really was. And all that matters, we beat Dana and Parks. That's all, that was the goal of the evening, and all three of us contributed to that happening.
Somebody texted in, so basically Cody was Cody Friday at pickleball. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I played way too hard. I did make one incredible hit, which I think counts for that.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to injure another member of Odyssey over at KMBZ, and I talked a fair amount of trash.
I don't know if you guys could tell, Parks was heated towards the end of that when you guys started going on that run.
He called me.
He thought the match was over.
He called me a liar.
He thought the match was over, and it wasn't.
Scott Parks called me a liar. He said that I was making up the fact. He thinks maybe I've just been, like, training
you
in my
sandbagged.
Basement with a pickleball paddle.
He did think you were sandbagging.
That's terrible.
I wasn't sandbagging. I had only played, like, five times.
Yeah.
I've played against, like, four people.
Yeah. So it worked out well for us. We had a great time.
Good
out
job,
there.
Guys.
And the embarrassing part, though, is that as of today, still.
You're still sore?
Sore. Sore.
Oh. I couldn't even figure out how to, like, someone was, like, asking us. We went to something yesterday that will explain the rest of it. So I'm also sore, but it's from two things. And it's the weirdest sentence to say in your adult life, and saddest probably. I am still sore from pickleball on Friday and being in a giant bounce house on Sunday morning.
Why were you in a bounce house?
Somebody said that they needed some kids for a TV shot. My kids were
the largest bounce house
epic
ever.
Bounce, and yeah. So they wanted to go to this giant outdoor bounce house, but my kid won't play by himself. So, like, I was, like, scaling giant bouncy house walls for, like, 2 hours. So I'm sore from bounce housing and
that is pathetic,
pickleball.
Man. I was walking the dog yesterday, and I was like, what the heck is going on? And it's like the lower, not quite lower back, Drew. It's basically, like, you know, upper butt region.
Oh, man.
You know? Mm. It's a little
still sore.
Little
still
sore. And I Googled it, and it happens in pickleball for people that are not playing and out of shape.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's a common
it's
injury.
It's sore, dude. It's a little sore.
Do you guys want to rematch Dana and Parks?
Yeah. I mean,
do you think they'll step back on the court with us?
They would. I'll be honest. I don't want to say I'm hooked because I only played once, but, like, I kind of want to. I want to play some.
You were saying that.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I really enjoy doing it. So whether it's going to Chicken and Pickle or Serve or any of these other places in town that have pickleball, I see why it's really popular and why
just
the sport's
in
growing.
Some people's neighborhood?
Mm-hmm. Mm. So
Drew,
were
you impressed? Maybe I am. Drew, were you impressed by my pickleball skills?
Yes. Well, I knew. Well, from the jump, I knew that if it was between you or Gold, who was going to be going full force, it was going to be you more than it was Alex.
Yeah,
but I will say that,
not to,
that shot that you hit was just insane. It was like a top 10 like SportsCenter type of play.
I was in a dead sprint. Like, I mean, the second it got hit, I was like, I don't think I was getting to that. Because, like, you were playing kind of deep
court.
And I played up, so I had to run all the way across the court. I also wasn't sure. When I hit it, I watched it go in, Drew. So, like, I watched it curve around
oh,
the
you
pole
did see
and
it.
Land
nice.
In. So I got to watch my shot, but because I was crashing into the entire wall, I didn't know whether or not.
Yeah, Dana volleyed it back over.
I didn't know whether or not we scored at
Yeah,
first.
We didn't score at first. She volleyed it back over. And that was the funny. Because at that point, I'm like, well, I can't screw this up. You
that
dove
would
and
be
saved.
Such a disappointment.
You dove and saved it. I'm like, well, I can't. So then we volleyed twice, and then we got a point.
I believe they were up 10-8, and they had service, and you guys won service back, and then you went four points in a row and won by two.
That was a good run.
What a victory.
So thanks to the folks at PickleCon. We had a ton of fun out there. Met some listeners as well. And now we got to. I feel like we got to play.
Cody and Gold Pickleball Tournament?
I think Cody and Gold Pickleball Tournament might be in play.
Okay. Get our own teammates. That professional pickleballer, he embarrassed us.
Yeah, so the second match we played,
he embarrassed us.
Not so
fortunate. Could not return a single serve from that guy. I had no issue returning any serve in the first match, and I just – this. He's a professional pickleball player. I couldn't get a good return on the serve. It was not good. And Cody's, like, at that point, I don't know if we were all so tired. It just was not a good match. It was
yeah, I think
match.
You guys are gassed.
Yeah, it was tough.
But you won the match that mattered most, right?
Yeah, that's the one we cared about. That was the one I genuinely cared
Drew
about.
Drew looked the part, though. He had, like, the right stance when he was playing and everything. Yeah. He
had it down.
He looked the part.
I think we do a Cody and
it was good.
Pickleball game.
I'm down.
Someone says, did you go to the doctor, Cody? Yeah, unlike Cody, I'm not going to urgent care this afternoon for a slight bone sprain or not a
muscle. The doctor was Friday. Yeah. He cleared me for pickleball, you know, so I was fine.
Oh, that's
he didn't
nice.
Clear me for pickleball. He cleared you for pickleball.
That was an already standing doctor's appointment.
Someone thinks the super bone is why you were able to make that play.
Oh, it actually gives me the ability.
Good,
the
a little more balance. On the although you were dragging your foot today.
Oh, a little bit, yeah.
The foot is dragging.
Between that and the bounce house, you know, same problem. Oh, man, what fun.
Let's talk about someone that has way more athletic ability than us, and that is Carson Steele, who suddenly, after one preseason game, is going to become a fan favorite. You can already tell.
That didn't take long, did it?
If he makes the team, and I think the answer is he's making this team, guys. He's making this team.
That one run alone might put him on the team.
It was already trending that way. We thought in the last week or so of practice, we had discussed his name last week, as a matter of fact. But he gets four carries, 29 yards, a touchdown. You can see why they're intrigued by him. Based off of his ability to run through contact, give them something they haven't had since Anthony Sherman. I think Andy Reid's going back to a fullback, and I know, look, maybe they would argue, well, he's not just a fullback, so we can let's list him as running back. That's fine. But they could line him up at the fullback position. They could line him up at running back. I think they like what he brings to the table. Now, it's still going to be limited use. I don't think he's suddenly
– no, let's it keep might still be 15 snaps a game or
when
less.
When you're doing the math on who keeps a roster spot, how many running backs, you know about Clyde and Pacheco as your number one, number two. After that, who's your third back? It's a weird way. Like Carson Steele could be in Prince. It could be Prince with Steele. So you're basically those are your 3-4 running back / fullback for this team heading into the season.
As much as I loved that 15 or 20 yard run, whatever it was, right, where he's breaking tackles and he just kind of looks like he's brushing through everybody. That was a fun run. That might have been the most fun game. The one that was the most encouraging was the 1 yard line. Like when you are yeah, I care about that way more than. Can Carson Steele occasionally break off a 15-yarder? I want somebody who with a full head of steam. I always thought Pacheco was pretty good at this. But another option down there, let's just say, just to throw him off, Gould, because sometimes when you're the 1 yard line, they know you're going right at him. Maybe Mahomes flips the other way and it goes to the fullback and that block goes a different direction. If you can actually threaten from a different player that yardage out, that was the most encouraging from a this might actually play in the regular season. The other one was just fun. A fun preseason run, in which I'm not counting on, at least at this moment, Carson Steele to be like 6 carries a game. You know,
yeah,
I imagine you get like one every once in a while.
Correct, yes. He was going up against second, third stringers. The tackling was more questionable. But he's going to make this team, and he's wearing the same number that Anthony Sherman wore. Like I think all that, they're going back. We're going to see them go back to what they were a couple years ago at that particular position. But he might be able to have more flexibility than just what even Sherman was as a fullback. Maybe he is kind of a hybrid halfback, fullback, whatever you want to call it. But I think, and he's going to speak to the media after practice today, so you get to hear from him. We'll bring you some of that audio. And someone on the text line, 913-586-7610, said, hey, are we done with the LRZ hype? I think, yeah, I think
it
so.
Just looks
it's a couple of reasons.
Unpolished.
One is Carson Steele. Also threw a wrinkle in this in a good way. The other part is LRZ looks like someone that's never played football before, and he hasn't. And so that's, I think, the reality of the situation. Pass protection, they have said he's gotten a lot better through camp, but you can tell he's not comfortable. I think he hesitates when he ran. You could tell when he was running the football, he was hesitating. Someone that has never played the sport. And I think now the projection should be that they're able to sneak him onto the practice squad. I would assume nobody else is going to sign him. But I think he's a practice squad guy. And the international roster exemption, remember, they use that on Godrick. So it's practice squad, I think, is the only option if you think LRZ is sticking with this organization during the season.
Yeah, it's not that I'm eliminating any possibility that he contributes to this team at some point. The only interesting facet is they had him kick late in the game.
They did.
So
they want to try that out.
They're still tinkering with that, which means they're still looking
but
for a reason.
There's no way he's going to be on the 53, though, if that's all he's doing. So I think it's practice squad. And then your hope is that next year at camp he's learned the game more and maybe he's a big surprise then. But
he's just gotta learn
Carson,
to move differently.
Carson Steele has also made it a little bit easier to say, all right, we'll wait for the practice squad for LRZ, and if some other team wants to take a flyer on him, so be it. I just can't imagine another team in the NFL giving him a roster spot either. Don't see that. And if I assume practice squad for him. All right, coming up next as we continue broadcasting from Chiefs training camp, we'll talk more about that bullpen we were hinting at a little bit. Urseg plus now a concerning injury in the bullpen with another member of the Royals, and the kickoff controversy in the Chiefs game and what is actually happening on those plays. I don't think anybody knows. That's next.